What's up, guys? It's Oliver, and welcome back to another banger episode of This Dude Started Something. Thank you so much for sitting through our first few ads.
Hey, it's Brayden, and yes, we did add advertisements, but between me and you guys, you can skip them if you just hit the fast forward button a couple times.
Today's guest is one of the kindest, most driven people we've ever had on the show. He's the founder of 40 Love, a nonprofit built directly to support people experiencing homelessness.
Using tennis, pickleball, and other community events to raise money, awareness, and hope. And he's also on track to become a doctor.
From launching a grassroots movement in high school to hosting events across the country and presenting research at Stanford, Sean is the real deal.
We're hyped to be heading to his next event in NYC this week. And if you're listening and want to come through, hit the RSVP link in the description.
How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, Oliver.
Of course. Happy to have you here. So tell us and our viewers a little bit more about 40 Love.
Yeah, so 40 Love is a nonprofit I started back in 2017, about 8 years ago. I've been fortunate enough to oversee and manage its growth over the years. Ever so thanks to its members and our supportive community. We started only with, you know, your bare bones flyer, some balls, and a tennis racket, and only a couple of participants. And we've grown, now expanding nationwide. We're hosting our next event in New York City.
That's awesome.
That's crazy. Me and Brayden
are going to be pulling up to the next event. And listeners, if you are in New York City, August 10th.
Flyer's going to be on the socials. Also, we're going to be vlogging a lot of this event, too. I'm super excited. It's pickleball, right?
Yep.
Okay. Good. I'll bring my racket then, right? Or my paddle.
You don't have to. It'll be provided. So.
Or you paddles provided? Oh my goodness,
paddles and
bro.
Balls provided. Yes.
Yeah, you guys heard it here. Paddles and balls provided. Pull up August 10th. It's gonna be crazy, man. Man, I have a lot of questions. You started this foundation. We've never really talked to anybody on this podcast of, like, foundation starters. And so it's a very different form of, I don't even know. I mean, it's kind of like a business because you got to market it, you know, but it's a nonprofit. Business. Yeah. It's nonprofit. It's a lot different. And I guess I want to know, how do you even start one of these things?
Yeah. So, honestly, you know, at like what, 15, 16 years old, I was like, you know, what am I even doing? Is this going to be something at all? Right. So, not a lot of people believed in it, which, you know, not to my surprise, right? But kind of this trial and error of what really worked for me, what didn't, and, you know, things that I didn't, I stopped doing. But with the kind of getting people and the community behind it is you kind of have to identify, you know, a problem in society, right? And then come up with a creative way for people to get out there. And then especially with pickleball or tennis, is the barrier for entry, at least, is lower, and you can really get all types of players, from adults to younger kids to people who've never touched a racket or been in the court before. You see all sorts of players. And then the more logistic side of figuring out what a nonprofit is really there's a lot of paperwork, obviously, but going through all of that, getting the insurance when you're doing the fundraisers and stuff, just to make sure everybody's covered, and then identifying what kind of beneficiaries there are in terms of homeless charities and stuff. So we are a tax-free, we're a 501c3. So yeah, you can kind of think of it as a business, but I guess obviously the difference is there's all the profits go back into the organization and to our events instead of taking in for profit.
So you guys essentially put on these events. Is pickleball like your most popular event that you do? I know you do tennis as well, right?
Yeah, so we started out as tennis. We've always considered other events, but I think maybe pickleball, when it really exploded around maybe 2021, 2022 is when we started seeing the shift, right? Like the shift. Yeah. So we got a lot of messages saying like, hey, like, can we do pickleball, you know, instead of tennis? Yeah. And we still keep tennis, but, you know, for the short-term future, we've seen pickleball pick up a lot of growth, and we've been very successful with all our pickleball tournaments.
Dude, pickleball is so interesting. It's got to be one of the only sports that young and old can play. I'm talking old. Like, I'm like 90 years old. People are out there hitting bangers, man. So I think that's a good business move. You're going to get a lot more people coming to your events and therefore making more, raising more money. So I have a question. So basically, you put on these events, people pay to come to the events, and then you just send the money yourself to these different organizations that help out homeless people? Is that like the beneficiaries?
Yeah, so our first charity that we fundraised for was Uplift Organization, which is they're a mobile outreach program in Kansas City, and they drive these trucks out in the evenings 3 days a week and deliver food, clothes, medicine, and then blankets in the winter, your winter clothes, free of charge, and they don't discriminate based off of, you know, sex, gender, religious orientation. So that's kind of why we chose it as our, you know, initial organization to collaborate with. And then from then on, as we started branching out to other regions in the country, we're trying to identify more charities that are share the same values. So in New York City, for example, we've identified some, and we're taking a vote later tonight to see how many charities really share that same mission. And then, yeah, a lot of the funds that we get from our events are going towards those charities. And then we try to minimize a lot of the cost, thanks to, you know, some of these venues. Hell's Kitchen Pickleball is generous enough to donate the courts free of charge, and wow. Yeah, and then they're providing, yeah, so it's very, very, very fortunate.
Very nice.
Wait, they don't film Hell's Kitchen there, right? I was wondering that, like, they don't film
so that. No, so Hell's Kitchen is very near. It's like, I think only a couple blocks down from the pickleball site. But no, it's a different venue. So not Hell's Kitchen wasn't filmed there.
Oh, okay.
But it's on the seventh floor. And the venue looks amazing. Normally the membership costs, almost, upwards of like $3,000 for the year or something like that. So
wow.
We're very Holy fortunate. Smokes, yeah. They're very generous. So yeah, so we try to minimize our costs as much as possible with venues like them, and then so we can send as much of the funding to the charities itself, and then obviously with our other forms of marketing, like, you know, our merchandise, we have 40 Love water bottles, and we're redesigning our T-shirts. So those are kind of some ways that people have contributed to the cause.
Yeah, Sean, I bought a water bottle like 7 years ago, and I still have it. It's pretty cool. It's a big orange water bottle. Yeah.
Yeah, we still got the same one. We have a green and orange one.
Yeah.
The original donor, man. That's tough.
Oliver's a 40 Love fan from the beginning. He's a true fan.
For sure, dude. So Sean, did you go and talk to the owners of that Hell's Kitchen venue yourself, or how did you get them to donate that venue for free?
Great question.
Great question, because, I didn't talk to like Gordon Ramsay or anything. Hopefully if we come into contact with him, sooner or later, but, we kind of fell into kind of one of their email streams. And then we reached out, like asking for like a collab. So we first started out with kind of your Parks and Rec in New York, and they recommended some venues that were more receptive to nonprofits, and one of them being Hell's Kitchen. So at first I was like, you know, they're not going to respond or anything, but my surprise, like they did. In due time, it wasn't like, you know, one day and they responded. I think it took some time, but they came around, and a couple other meetings. And we we just had to abide by some of the rules. So, you know, no outside food or water, and that's a little different from our events. This one's a little more tight, more regulated. We worked it out, all the logistics. So we just got approval. Okay. I think today was, you know, we're all set for the advertising. So, awesome. Got our event in 2 weeks.
Wow, dude.
So you said you're meeting with other members of 40 Love tonight. I looked on your website. It seems like you guys have a massive team, lots of ambassadors, lots of people behind you. Tell us what that's like. How many people there are working for 40 Love or working with 40 Love, and kind of how you manage them while also doing school and so many other things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 40 Love's growth is, I mentioned it initially, is, you know, thanks to everybody involved. Because in the beginning, it was kind of, you know, me kind of not knowing what I was doing and navigating through all the weeds and sorting it out. But as the organization grows, and with anything, right, you can't do everything yourself. And especially, like you said, with medical school, it started to get really hard. And I had questions like, how do I do this? And, you know, I kind of learned what that comes with delegation and management is, mm-hmm. kind of inspiring that next generation, you know, people even younger than I was, to take some of the tasks and learn and keep growing the organization. So we have a lot of great ambassadors. So for this one, we used our NYU and Columbia ambassadors. Our NYU peeps headed this one up. So they're really passionate about kind of helping those that are underserved, but I wanted to provide them this guidance, the safety, kind of the safety net and breaks that I didn't have when I was starting out, right? Because when I was starting out, I didn't even know if it was going to come to fruition, and I was just doing things randomly. But, you know, with them being an ambassador for 40 Love, I kind of worked with them through how do you manage an event? How do we set up, you know, volunteering and try to advertise? And how do we do more research into the social determinants of health and how it affects homelessness? So we're making sure that their motivation is directly tied to some of the results, so that their efforts aren't wasted, because obviously they're already busy with school, and we want to make sure that young minds, that they get their results of what they want. So it's kind of like a safety net here. So, but yeah. Amazing to work with such young, talented people, and really keeps me going as well.
That's dude, awesome. That's amazing, Sean, man.
So nice, man. Such a nice guy.
Dude, legend, bro. So, what field of medical are you going into? And like, how much school do you have left?
Yeah, so I have I have a little less than a year. So I find out what specialty, or if I, you know, it's called this thing called like match. So I'm going in at 2026 matches is next year when I'll officially get my MD. And then I'm going
into the draft or something, dude. Like,
I know it's like the draft you like number one, you know, pick, medicine, which is weird. Bro, you get this envelope. I know, sure. You get this envelope, they call your name, and then you open it and you're like, oh, this is where I'm at. So, you know, I'll be in New York City doing like a sub internship at, you know, Columbia, right? But I don't even know if I'm going to be in New York or somewhere else. So,
dang.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean, I'll
St. Luke's East drafts Sean Nguyen. Like, crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's exactly like the drafts, honestly. Yeah. Wow. First pick. Or, hopefully I'm first.
So,
pick.
Where's your top pick that you would want to go to?
My top pick? Oh, I mean,
just in case they're listening.
Yeah, that's a great question. But, I mean, with family being originally from the Bay Area, I mean, I just rotated at Stanford, so fresh off my mind, they're definitely up there. I want to shout them and their department out, but Columbia is definitely up there. I love the city of New York, but yeah, kind of like this ordeal of not wanting to, you know, count my eggs before they hatch. Yeah. But I gotta see, you know, interviews, if they are able to interview me too, because that's when, you know, the rank lists and everything finalizes. But yeah, I mean, both New York, Bay Area, Chicago's I think those three are definitely top for me: Chicago, Bay, and NYC.
Well, you have some great options there. Yeah,
yeah.
Which is yep.
So, are you familiar with Andrew Huberman?
Yeah, you know of course. Is? Yeah, yeah.
Yep. I believe he Stanford. Yeah.
Yep.
Dude, that's crazy, man. I listen to his podcast every day.
My dad every is day, a big fan of Andrew Huberman.
Dude, that's sick, man. Bro, we should get into the science of I don't know, like foundations somehow. Or I mean, we could even go into like what the homeless people have to go through, and I'm sure you're very, very educated on that. And we could even talk about like the people you're helping with your foundation. I mean, it's terrible. Like I feel like everybody's seen a homeless person anytime you go to the city, and it's just like we're trained to ignore them, and we don't really even think about what they're going through. So I would love to hear your takes on all of that, which we can get into later. I don't know. For now, Oliver, where should we go next with this? I mean, we could go so many routes.
Well, congrats on finishing up at Stanford.
Yeah, first and foremost.
You also co-wrote a paper there, right?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm on the Stanford Lifestyle Medicine team, one of the sports medicine physicians. Directors was founding kind of the lifestyle medicine brand here at Stanford. So, yeah, very fortunate to be kind of one of the researchers. So, yes.
Yeah.
Wow, dude.
Well, speaking of research, you have a research area on your website, and I know you guys do some of your own research. Who's kind of behind that, and what are you guys researching?
Yeah, so on the 40 Love side, research is kind of a thing we're keeping in the back burner, but we're still working on it in terms of social determinants of health. We presented recently at a conference, it's called the Humanitarian Health Conference in Kansas City. I think it was around 2 months ago, and a lot of our research had to do with how kind of this medical debt functions into leading to, you know, different types of healthcare disparities and ultimately homelessness. So that was a lot of what our research was centered on. And then we kind of explored, you know, how do people kind of sort of become homeless in the first place? And obviously things like, you know, drug use and obviously, you know, there's social factors, how people were born into it, or, you know, some people fell into it, you know, with the whole economy, et cetera. But kind of seeing that and doing sort of the advocacy effect too behind it is in terms of, you know, either lobbying or pushing bills. I'm a delegate on the American Medical Association. A lot of, you know, bills we see kind of get pushed on there, and we debate it, and you know see what happens. But yeah, that's kind of what our research is on.
Bro, you just keep whipping out like credentials, bro. Yeah. It's crazy, man.
No. It just says no. It's cool because like they're the governing body of like a lot of. They're kind of like the main governing body behind in the medical field behind, you know, some of the decisions that Congress makes, and kind of. Mm-hmm. After World War II ended, kind of how the U.S. healthcare system was shaped up, the main governing body behind that was the AMA. Yeah, I mean, I'm only a small factor. I'm not like the main guy or anything. Definitely, I'm only like a tiny speck. So, but yeah, just mainly like a learner. So definitely not up there by any means.
Does the AMA do their own research, or are they primarily just... Like I don't know. I might be getting my organizations mixed up. I know there's like a American association that does a lot of research on stuff that you're talking about. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. So good question. So not a lot of people are familiar with the AMA. So the AMA is basically Congress, but for the medical field. So all of the, you know, bills, any, you know, controversial hot topics you can think of. The AMA does have a lot of, you know, backing and funding in that regard to delegate their works towards, or if the bill, majority of its members vote no, then they won't, you know, touch it, right? But
yeah,
it's sort of think of it as the government for it in the medical field.
Okay.
And how do they make their decisions? Are they looking at like current research from people inside of the organization, or to, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, how do they decide, oh, let's pass this bill? You know, are they looking at research from you guys or what?
Right. Yeah. I mean, my answer to that is, I sure hope so. Because yeah. A lot of, you know, that's the controversy behind it. We're seeing it, you know, now more than ever. You know, every year the meetings in Chicago, the big one, the annual conference, and supposedly all the delegates from, you know, all the states, right, and all the medical mm-hmm. schools go in. Doctors, residents, medical students are kind of, you know, the next up in line. They have a say, but not as much. Okay. And then it's exactly how Parliament works. So, you know, a bill, you move to previous question for voting, you need a second, you vote on it, there are pros and cons speeches, you can vote mm-hmm. to table it, et cetera, all the, mm-hmm. you know, things that Congress does. And so you need, you know, majority vote to pass it on, and you can do amendments, et cetera. And then there's a whole process of, you know, drafting the bill beforehand and, you know, getting it to the table in the first place. So, yeah, so that's kind of how it works. Just think of it kind of like how Congress does it. But, yeah, they rely on research from, you know, contemporary issues to their own, because these are physicians in their respective fields. So you'll have surgeons, cardiologists, right, orthopedic surgeons, rehab doctors, you know, so all of them with their knowledge in their respective fields coming together. So, yeah, you'll hopefully, I mean, to answer your question directly, hopefully, I hope it's governed by research. But, you know, it's just like so Congress, too, yeah. There's that controversy. So
true. Huh. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Could you like give us an example of an area where, like you're saying, health would directly influence homelessness?
In the AMA?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of the bills that the AMA that's been brought up is like creating, let's say, more affordable housing versus, you know, the free market, right? And then looking at, you know, controlling. The AMA doesn't really have a say on the minimum wage, obviously, right? But, you know, they, in terms of creating or balancing between how much they want to step in to create more affordable housing and creating these barriers for, you know, these Medicare plans and et cetera, right? So, I mean, the number one cause of debt is actually medical debt.
Wow.
You know, some of these kind of, things that people rely on, like, you know, the floor for where, you know, what qualifies as low income, you know, and what kind of like Medicare Part A, B, C, D, Medicaid, right? So kind of some of those issues determine, you know, who gets it and who doesn't. And then, yeah, that those are kind of the things that where it interplay. So it's frightening that medical debt is the number one cause of debt in this country.
That's just, you know,
you guys obviously know how much we spend on healthcare in this country versus, you know, other countries. So
yeah,
well, it's just scary because it's like being injured or I don't know, diagnosed with something is already, I can imagine, very scary, you know. So and then people are thinking, oh man, it's gonna cost so much. And then they're like not going to the doctor or whatever for, I don't know. There's probably so many reasons. But I heard you mention that a lot of homeless people end up going to debt out of, you know, medical expenses. Do you know the numbers? How many homeless people really end up where they are because of that? Like, do you, off the top of your head? I guess I could probably just look it up, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, are you talking about, like, nationwide, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out, like, what's the root cause? What's the average homeless person, how did they get there? You know what I mean? I'm sure there's billions or millions of stories, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like medical expenses could be a top reason, you know?
Yeah, it definitely could be a top. From our, like, understanding and from my understanding is there's not a lot of literature out there that, you know, really ties you into, you know, one specific reason. There's, you know, one website will say one thing and the other will say another thing, but it's definitely, you know, a multitude some people don't disclose that they were raised or they came from a less fortunate circumstance. Drug use is a big reason for that. So I guess you could group that in the medical. And then, yeah, obviously medical issues, ER visits in this country, it can be extremely expensive. But off the top of my head, I don't, unfortunately, that's something we're still trying to figure out. How do these people get there?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very, very unfortunate. But yeah, definitely more research needs to be into that.
And do you know where we stand with other countries on homelessness in America? Are we higher, lower, pretty similar, or what?
I will say this without making it, you know, too controversial, is for our place in the world in terms of, you know, being a world leader and maintaining hegemony, right? I will say our social issues or our prioritization of social issues that we have currently is not very good. I will say that comparatively.
Yeah.
I think for where we are and where we're trying to be in contrast to the rest of the world, our focus on domestic issues here at hand, homeless veterans, affordability, housing crisis, is not up to par with where our goals and our alignment should be. I'll say that.
Completely fair. Yes. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I kind of want to dive into just homelessness. I mean, obviously, you know a ton about it, and I feel like we should educate people about it. Does your average homeless person, like, do they have, I mean, is it hard to identify these people? I mean, I don't know. That might be a stupid question, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, what do they actually have, you know? It's like, they can't really have like a license, probably. I don't know. Maybe they can. I don't know. It probably depends on the situation, but.
Yeah, no, great question. So, I mean, the definition of unhoused / homelessness is without a house, right? So it's so difficult to say, like, you know, who doesn't and who does just by, you know, looking at them. Let's say, like, 2 p.m. on a Sunday, you're walking around, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference unless, you know, their appearance is, you know, looks as such, right? And that's kind of the reason. I mean, it's so hard to identify them. And that's sort of the reason we don't know, like, what really causes it, right? But in terms of, from my work and my experience, homeless or unhoused individuals, they tend to gather in kind of sort of these camps with each other, right? From just using the limited resources they have, just for warmth, connection, resources. You know, if one that you'll see, probably you've probably seen it before, shopping carts, right? From grocery stores, serving as kind of, you know, the kind of a roof of a house, right? So you'll see a lot of them. As when I was doing volunteering and, you know, seeing from, you know, my work with 40 Love, is there's designated sites and camps that they'll usually be at. So that's when you can kind of sort of make the, you know, the bear markings, right? Make, usually most of them are around here, but, you know, obviously in a different city, in like NYC, there's obviously more with a bigger population. But yeah, I mean, every city, it's so hard to see where they are. And you just have the more work you do in it, the more you volunteer and kind of go around is kind of where you get your bearings. But yeah, it's very difficult to tell. I will say this, from, you know, speaking on behalf of the org itself and our work, is our goal is to drive down the number and improve their quality of life for whoever there is that is already homeless, right? Obviously, in a perfect world, we'd like to see zero. But, you know, as of the status quo, the number is only increasing, unfortunately, with the current affordability of housing and, you know, daily things, right? That number is only going to get worse. But our main goal is to improve quality of life and comfort as much as possible with our homeless population wherever we serve, and to try to decrease and minimize that number as much as possible. Now, whether it's through, you know, affordable housing / putting more jobs back into the economy, we've done our research on a lot of the topics. Ultimately, I don't want to, you know, say anything on behalf of the organization, but I'll say that our goal is to support whatever improves their lives the most.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot of becoming homeless, kind of what contributes to that. But really, wouldn't you say one of the biggest issues is remaining homeless? It's so hard to get out of that hole.
Yeah, do you get a job and stuff.
Yeah, like, do you think there's enough organizations that are open to hiring homeless people, or do you think we need more of those?
Yeah, I think in terms of job barrier for entry, I feel like there needs to be, I feel like there should be more jobs for them, yeah. In terms of, you know, you can't expect them to be, you know, wearing like, you know, suit and tie, having right. all these credentials, yeah, exactly. graduating yeah. from Harvard or, you know, et cetera, right? But, you know, not to say that those jobs are the leftovers, not to say that, but that, you know, everyone serves their place in society, right? And we, you know, me as a future physician is no more than they are, as, you know, all these jobs that we may need, whether it be, you know, custodian, server, worker, kind of behind the scenes. You know, I'm more front facing, I guess, because I deal with patients, but, you know, not to say that I'm more important, but I do think there should be more jobs for them to, A, you know, be able to work their way back, right? Right. To come back and serve their place in society and be able to afford a living, right? Whether it's, you know, minimum wage or enough to feed, clothe themselves. Now, whether they're able to afford it with that job is different. That's, you know, kind of an economic problem, right? But being able to contribute to society without these, you know, these markings and barriers and credentials, I think is one thing that needs to be improved. And and that's a whole nother topic, right? Like the value of a college degree, et cetera. Not, you know, and not to, you know, dive into that, because that's a whole other topic. Right. But I will say, on behalf of, you know, my work with 40 Love, is there needs to be more opportunities for them. Just because they're homeless does not mean they're useless. Those two things do not equate.
Yeah.
So would you agree that that is the biggest problem, is of getting out? Or do you think, like, people start drugs? Like, what is the hardest obstacle of getting out of homelessness?
I mean, that's a loaded question, but very, very important. Obviously, I haven't been homeless myself, so I don't want to speak on behalf of them. My dad used to be homeless, and for him, it was, you know, how his situation came about. He, you know, was a resistance fighter for South Vietnam in the war, imprisoned, tortured, came over here, escaped, homeless for several years. He always had the motivation, so I mean, with some help, little support, he eventually worked his way back. Doesn't really have, you know, your formal, you know, 4-year degree like we mentioned earlier on that topic. But yeah, with him, it was, you know, the lack of opportunities, which you can cite as one of them. But obviously he didn't, you know, he wasn't someone that had substance abuse disorder, but that's also another big one. We've seen it, especially in Kansas City, the opioid crisis and such other illicit drug use is a very big contributor to homelessness. And, like, not only initiating that, but, you know, maintaining, staying in that state. So that's another big driver. Lack of housing is another thing. A lot of empty warehouses are actually not being used. Like, no one's, they're abandoned, not really living in them. So, you know, that's another thing. Like, could we rebuild them, or, you know, but obviously that costs more money, right? So, you know, it's this checks and balances of, you know, where do we want to take it? And, you know, with 40 Love, it's, you know, we're trying to get them there, and whether, you know, kind of the politics and the economy, we get them to a certain point, and then unfortunately from that point, the economy and this current, you know, social situation takes over, unfortunately. Yeah. And, you know, as someone that's an advocate for them, and Oliver, you know, you've been supporting us for a while, is it sucks because you have to fight two battles, right? You got to get them, you got to get them well enough and provide them enough opportunities. They have to be there. And then from there on, can they, be able to sustain themselves in the current economy? And are they able to find housing with the limited number amount of housing that we have?
Wow, dude. That story about your dad is crazy, man. That is crazy, dude. And I mean, if he didn't make it, I mean, just think about the, I mean, by him making it out of homelessness, you know, without that, you might have not started that, you know, this foundation, and countless lives wouldn't have been helped out, you know, which is pretty, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I've heard, and I couldn't tell you where I heard this from, but I heard that even after like 3 days of somebody being homeless, I think there was some sort of study where they put out just regular people out on the street, and they became like, they just like, it almost seemed like they were on drugs, but they weren't doing drugs because of just like the physical toll that it takes on your body of being homeless. People were kind of like,
yeah, like
losing
the mental state. Yeah.
Yeah. The mental state. So it's not like always even like the drugs.
Yeah.
But just the physical toll, the mental toll, because you're not able
and
to like socialize.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That also has an impact, I think. I don't know where I heard that, but even just like 3 days after being on the streets, nowhere else to go, people were feeling these effects, which, I mean, like I said, I can't tell you, I can't cite that, but it is just interesting to think about, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As much as it is, people think it's physical, it's also mental too. I remember my dad always saying, like, you know, people look at you differently than on the streets. Let's say, like, you know, us three, if we were to walk onto the street, we, let's say, go to a grocery store, Target, whatever, people would, you know, not really notice us, or, you know, just look and, you know, it's whatever, right? But if you are homeless and you're walking around, like my dad, he said people look at you very differently, like as inferior, they'll, you know, normally two people are just walking like this, right? It's kind of like, you know, they kind of, you know, avoid you, right? Yeah, to protect their loved ones and make sure, because they're afraid you're going to do something to them. But, you know, obviously my dad's like, you know, I'm just hungry. I'm not trying to do something to you, you know?
Dude,
so
your dad's
like
the coolest guy I've ever met. Like, I still remember, like, talking to him, dude. And he's so smart, too. Dude, he's so cool. We got to get him on the podcast sometime, bro.
Yeah,
dude,
100%.
Awesome.
Yes. We got to get him on the podcast. Yeah, he's smarter than – he's very, very smart.
He's very
way
smart.
than I am. I'll say that.
Wow, that's saying something, dude.
Yeah, no. Yeah, but for sure, yeah, no, definitely smarter than me. I don't say that, you know, I don't say that willy-nilly. But he mentioned, you know, the social aspect. You know, people view you as, you know, the breadcrumbs of society. And then obviously when you're that, no one's going to, you know, help you. They're just going to try not to be harmed by you. And you can't go to the grocery store without people, security, looking at it, like waiting for you to do something or trying to find reasons to kick you out. You can't go get a haircut or, you know, shower because obviously you don't have money. But, you know, you go in and the whole room, like, doesn't smell the best, right? Those were his words of what it meant. And, you know, in terms of community, like, you can't do anything either. You can't rely on anybody, you're by yourself, and it's you in the wild. So it's really true Darwinism, to put it bluntly, at its finest. So it's survival.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Not everyone makes it. My dad was a fortunate case of someone that did, but, you know, unfortunately, not everyone makes it. So, yeah, I mean, it's as much as it's physical, it's definitely social. Whenever I come up to, you know, somebody that doesn't have a house, I always try to, you know, greet them the same, treat them with the same amount of respect as I would, you know, talking to anybody else. So, and it's obviously not easy for them, but I hope, you know, our interaction, at least, I'm like, if we can correct this, then hopefully it's another effect down the line. Younger generations, they see that and, you know, they're able to change the narrative.
Yeah.
So what do you do if you, obviously it probably depends on a lot of different things, but if there was like a first move to do if you're homeless, what do you do? What's the best thing to do if you find yourself in that situation?
Yeah, so you mean like if I was, like I became homeless or I started out homeless?
Oh man, let's just say you became homeless. Yeah.
I became homeless, so I previously wasn't?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, at different points of life, and obviously it depends on what skill sets you have, right? But universally, easier said than done. I don't want to, you know, speak to anyone that's, you know, homeless and say like, oh, like, why didn't you do X, Y, Z? But if right. If, you know, you gave me a hypothetical, I was in that case, I would use whatever skills I had. Obviously right now, I guess I would get a barrier job, you know, for entry. I would try to look as presentable as possible and, you know, work kind of your entry level job that didn't require, you know, a college degree. And then slowly from there, hopefully have enough funding from, you know, my job to be able to do that. Easier said than done in today's economy. Minimum wage is very hard to live by and be able to afford something, get yourself out of that.
For sure.
Obviously, I mean, I don't even know if that's, you know, the solution. I haven't been there, and I was like, you know, it's very, very tough to get out of a situation like that. But the good thing is, you guys may have seen, is the barrier for entry into jobs nowadays that require, you know, a 4-year college degree is slowly decreasing, and there people are kind of seeing, you know, what is the true value of that. So, I mean, it does open the number of doors, but we obviously need more jobs that are, you know, kind of behind the scenes and for people that don't have a house. So that's kind of my thing is that what I would do. Find, you know, your barrier entry job. Try to find a skill set that I'm, you know, well into. For me, I guess that's coaching tennis, but I mean, that's kind of what I've been doing on the side. But seeing like what skills do I bring and how do I kind of elevate myself from there and get back into society. So, obviously, you know, staying away from substances as well. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of alcohol dependence as well, and, you know, drug use.
I have another point about it is, without a home, without a physical address, there's a lot of implications to that. The first being, it makes it much harder to open up a bank account, and all jobs pay with bank accounts. Now, no one's paying in cash unless you work at, you know,
something in the and a lot of people can't do that, you know what I mean? I'd imagine that the first few days, maybe week, is crucial. Like you were talking about, Sean, like, okay, you want to look at your skills and figure out what you can do. I mean, you got to do that probably within, I mean, you can't be homeless for long, because then you start to get these effects that we're talking about earlier. So it's like, you almost got to act quick, you know? I feel like that's your best bet.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's what my dad kind of, he was homeless for a while, and I remember he was saying, like, during the winter, especially here, I remember doing jumping jacks and, you know, falling on the snow because he was so tired. But, you know, he had to do it for warmth, right? And, so, I mean, he obviously had unhealed bruises and, you know, and obviously, you know, brain injury from, you know, in Vietnamese prison. But, you know, so many things and so many factors going against you in that I wouldn't be the right person. So much so I wouldn't be the right person to give you a proper answer. But yeah, like having to act fast and having the support, like whether it be, you know, someone you know, or if you don't know, you know, anybody in the area or at all, is there's, you know, kind enough people that walked in my dad's way that were able to spare him a few dollars and some clothes. I remember he was saying when he was homeless, both in the Bay Area and when he was in Missouri, he was kicked out of his dad's house twice. So now that obviously wasn't easy, but finding people that are able to support you just, you know, a little bit for you to keep that hope alive. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what did it for him. But I obviously put me in that situation, I might not have made it out of it. So that's a super tricky question for you know, us here who, I mean, I presume you guys haven't been homeless either, but
no.
Same thing with why Uplift has survived the same way, like off of donations only. Like I thought Uplift wouldn't be there without donations, and to be quite blunt, I don't think a lot of homeless people would be around without, you know, support from these charities. And that's kind of sort of why 40 Love works, to support all these charities, because I know without all of them running and operating, there wouldn't be a lot of homeless people left, not for the right reason, not because they were not homeless anymore. So that's, unfortunately, that's the answer. But I mean, that it's super tough.
If we're being optimistic, like the homeless people we see, obviously we don't want to see it, but it's like that means that these charities are, you know, they're working. I mean, there's hope, you know. I mean, there's people out there helping. Yeah. I think we all should be. Yeah. I wonder if maybe, like, with your dad being in the Vietnamese prison, if that almost gave him some hope when he got here. Like, obviously, I can't even imagine, like, being in a Vietnamese prison, dude. But that's, like,
he's got to be so strong and, like.
Oh, it's
but,
just, like,
that feeling of getting to America, like, that I had to feel.
Right? Like, there's hope. You know what I'm saying? Like, he saw what he could get, right? So it's, like. I don't know, man. I don't know. There's hope.
Yeah. It's crazy. I hope so. I hope there is. I mean, these charities are the only thing we kind of – it's like kind of the last barrier, right?
Well, it's such a hard issue, too. There's no right answer, like you say. I mean, every person's case is different, like your dad's. And, I mean, it's just – it's a hard answer.
Yeah.
Sean, what's your take on, like, early on in school, when we talk about homelessness, like elementary school, middle school, teachers and everyone would always say to buy them food, give them water bottles, don't just give them cash. What's your thoughts on that?
I will say this. My take on this is you don't get them closest to the source as possible. And that means I agree with that sentiment, get them water so that they don't use it on, you know, drugs or other means, right? But right. I would even go further, get them closer to the source, which means get them the connection they need to be able to get that job, be able to almost afford themselves or get as close to it as possible. And that doesn't mean, you know, buying them a house or anything, right? Obviously not everybody can do that. But get them the connection they need so that they can suffice on their own is my advice, because you obviously, you know, everyone's heard the saying, teach a man a fish, he'll be, you know, much better off than if he, you know, you just give him one, right? So get them as close as where they can be, that they can have a livable job. If that means, you know, a shower, if that means a, you know, asking them what their skill sets are, I think that's more valuable than just giving here's a $50 bill. I think that's more valuable.
Yeah. Dude, I just thought about this. Like, homeless people, how do they even find out where the shelters are? How do they even find out where they can get help? Like, they don't have phones. Like, they can't just look up address.
Everyone's different. I'm actually going to look up what the percentage is with phones, see if they have that stat. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's why the camps are so important. You remember, I think, so in the beginning part of the interview, I was saying, you know, every city is different, but, you know, you'll see, you know, these camps and barriers where a lot of them, you know, congregate around. And from that is usually how they know where the resources are, you know, because if it was just one of them by themselves, then they wouldn't be connected.
So they can kind of talk and help each other out. Like,
exactly. And Uplift knows where these are, and they'll drive and they'll stop at each one. So it's kind of, they'll know, you know, where the markings are. So that's the main reason how they know.
And it says 70 to 90% have phones.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And also, we did talk to Silas Dean, who helps incarcerated people once they get out. Have access to resources like jobs and housing. I feel like this kind of goes hand in hand.
Definitely does. It'd be interesting to connect you guys, because I wonder, I think you would find that interesting, Sean. He's done a lot of cool stuff, and it was a really interesting interview. I guess that makes sense then, that Bro, that's actually wild, though. Well, here's the thing, though. If 70 to 90% have phones, it's like, do they have providers, though? Like, they probably don't, right?
Free so, like, Wi-Fi, probably. Like, yeah, they go, yeah, I don't know, maybe like a park, public park Wi-Fi or something.
True. Okay.
To be honest, yeah. I thought that number was a little low. I knew some of them, I was thinking half of them have phones from what I've worked with. Some of them have Wi-Fi. Some of them usually like very outdated phones where you can only send, you know, either type or like not your advanced, you know, unlimited data and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the specifics, that I'm not too sure. And I think it differs obviously significantly by area. So that's tough to say.
Just so for everybody listening, I want to give everybody, like, I guess you could say advice or just a protocol for helping out a homeless person. I know you mentioned like getting them closer to the source of getting help. Give us like let's say I see a homeless person. Okay, I think all of you said water bottle would be solid. You know, clothes. I think that's something also, I might. Yeah,
you kind of got to identify who you see because, like, I don't know. Like, the other night I'm walking here in New York City and, like, you can see people that are tweaking and, like, shooting up in the street.
Yeah. So,
like, I think it definitely matters. Like, and then you'll just see people in Central Park that are really just, like, they're not on drugs. They're just homeless. They're just sleeping. So I think it matters on who it is first.
So in that case, maybe a little bit of money would help out for sure. It definitely would for sure. And clothes, I don't even know why I've never thought about this, but I donate my clothes to like Goodwill sometimes or thrift stores. But it's like you still.
Bro, we should give merch out.
We should give merch out. I feel like it's still hard for homeless people to access even like the Goodwill or the thrift store. Like, why don't I just go out here, carry some clothes in my back, in the back of the car, and if I see a homeless person, like, give them a sweatshirt. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a good idea.
That type of stuff. I never even thought about that. And then, like you said, the most important thing, get them closer to a helpful source, you know, which.
Like, I love those videos of the contractors that'll like ask them if they want to come help at like a construction site for a few hours.
Oh yeah.
And like buy some lunch. Like, dude, those are sick.
Yeah. Which I don't know how you would do like would they have to sign a waiver or something to do that? I don't know.
I'm sure there's legal implications, but like I think they really just want a job.
Yeah, well I'm just curious if for the person.
I mean, yeah, but that's just America making it harder. Especially with like here in New York, like you can't even work construction unless you're like, I mean, I don't want to generalize or anything, but it's pretty hard to work construction. You got to be like part of the union and you probably do have to sign a whole bunch of stuff and probably is hard.
Like how do they even figure out how to do all that, you know? Like if you're homeless, you don't, let's say you don't have a phone.
We wouldn't even know how to do that.
I'd be toast.
Access.
I will say this is that I think a lot of the spending that our government does to keep it, you know, least political as possible is I think some of that spending can be diverged into domestic issues like solving homelessness. I think if we put that same percentage consistently, I think we would have a significantly less of an epidemic that we do have now.
Or sometimes it's not even like Sean, yes, I completely agree with you, but I sometimes feel like it's not the actual big ticket number we're seeing that's the problem. Like we need a bigger number. It's where that number's going is not going to helpful places, like really ever. It's going to special interests and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Is there like a source or a website where we can see all the numbers like exact, like where our money is, where the U.S.'s money is going?
Yeah, there is. I can't tell you like only this website, but if you look it up, you can see like what percentage, right? Like something like
you can see our
that's
debt.
Why we know. Why we know, you know, the U.S. spends this much on healthcare versus, you know, other countries. Let's say like, you know, Singapore, for example, spends, you know, less than 5% of their GDP on healthcare, and they have one of the best healthcare in the world. You know,
Singapore
stuff like that, right?
Is an awesome place. with awesome people. And
why can't we just copy that?
Well, no, because you can't. No, because not to get into any crazy territory, but people in America are not like people in Singapore. It starts with the people, you know. It's like Sean says, you know, you got to teach them to fish. You know, you got to teach them to be good people. Like people in Singapore, you can leave your laptop in the coffee shop and go run down the street to grab something. Your laptop will still be there. Here,
man,
probably not. So,
yeah, no.
Yeah, I think it starts with the people first. But then, yeah, maybe one day we can get there. That would be great.
Wow. Yeah, I sure hope so. But, yes, definitely keep the government accountable for sure. You know, look up and see, like, you can see, you know, how much do we spend on this versus, you know, other things. So, yeah, you know, something to keep an eye on. But, yeah, it's so important nowadays. And the problem, I fear, is only getting worse. We've seen it, you know, every single year. Right? But, yeah, I mean, we can only do our part in helping with this. So, and I appreciate you guys' support as well.
Yeah. Man, well,
oh, yeah,
we appreciate you starting 40 Love, man.
Yes.
You're, yeah. You're on the front lines.
Dude, yes, yeah. Obviously. It's become, you know, so fulfilling every time I, you know, do it every year. And you know, we're only expanding. We've done more volunteering this past year. And then, yeah, thanks to supporters like you, Oliver, so, and Braden, you as well, when you come up to New York. So we're so excited. I hope that we get a big turnout.
Yes, dude.
Dude, same, man. Dude, Oliver, you got to hit up, like, some Tinder girls. Get them up there.
Bro, I texted it in my NYU group chat, and
really?
Some people liked it. So hopefully we'll get them there.
Dude, that's solid, bro. Yeah, like, and put it in the bio.
And we should film some content when Sean gets here, dude. We could buy some merch ahead of time. Although it's like summer, but I mean, we could hand out some new clothes, or we can hand out water bottles. We could do some stuff.
Yeah, we could get rid of the summer stock, you know, on clearance. We don't have any stock, dude. We just like it sends out when they buy it. But I'm looking forward to talking to you, Sean, in person, man. And we should do like a little
mini
segment.
Pod.
Yeah, mini pods. So, like, I know you're probably super busy, but it'd be sick to get you on for like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, it'd be cool to talk to you about like the medical field too at some point, and
we can have him back on and like in a few years when he's a physician.
That's what I'm thinking. Thank you everybody for listening to this episode of This Dude Started Something. What an awesome guy. Wait, hold on, can you for your 40 Love, can you just go donate? Like, how do you donate?
You can go ahead and go on our website. You can donate there. Obviously, you can send by email whatever, you know, merch you're looking for. But we have water bottles on sale at the event if you go on our Eventbrite.
They're fire.
Making new t-shirts.
Dude, awesome, man. That's great, man. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check out the website. We'll be sending it to people. And, everybody listening, go check it out. That was Sean Nguyen. Thank you for being here. And we'll catch you guys later.